usually when we talk about macroeconomic principles, you know, particularly in a real estate market, there is this expectation of clean, predictable momentum.
Right. Like it's supposed to make logical sense.
Exactly. It's supposed to function a lot like physics, right? I mean, you drop interest rates, the cost of borrowing becomes cheap, demand goes up, and prices just follow suit.
Yeah, that's the classic textbook scenario.
Right. And conversely, you raise interest rates, the cost of money becomes painful, demand plummets, prices cool down, and then, you know, inventory begins to stack up on the sidelines.
The old economics 101 seesaw.
Yes. We are taught this seesaw logic from day one, and it's comforting, I think, because we fundamentally like our economic indicators to just, well, make logical sense.
Oh, absolutely. We want to know that A leads to B.
But if you step into the housing market we are living in today, specifically here in Texas right now, in late July 2026, you quickly realize that the seesaw is just entirely broken.
Broken and honestly maybe tossed in the dumpster at this point.
Completely. And for anyone listening anywhere in the state right now, I mean, you are currently surviving the absolute sweltering peak of the midsummer heat.
Oh, it is brutal out there this week.
It really is. You are juggling weekend BBQs. You are aggressively watering your foundation so your house doesn't literally crack in half.
Which is a very real Texas homeowner problem, by the way.
Right. You have to water the dirt. And for a massive demographic of our listeners, you are anxiously trying to finalize a move, you know, get the boxes unpacked and get established in a new school district before the back to school rush hits in just a few weeks.
Yeah, August is right around the corner. The clock is definitely ticking.
The clock is ticking. The 105 degree heat is oppressive and the real estate landscape around you is completely murky. So that is our mission today. We are taking a massive stack of hyperlocal dense market reports and decoding exactly what is happening in the Tarrant County housing market right now.
And we've got some fantastic data to pull from for this deep dive.
We do. We are pulling from regional MLS summaries, broader Dallas-Fort Worth rate trend reports, and specifically, we have the raw data from the North Texas Real Estate Information Systems, which, by the way, for anyone new to the area, is pronounced locally as NETTRES.
Oh, yeah. NETTRES is definitely the subtle shibboleth for anyone operating in the North Texas real estate ecosystem.
It's a secret handshake, basically.
Exactly. If you say NTREIS, I mean, you immediately out yourself as an outsider.
Right.
And, you know, unpacking this NETTRES data reveals a central glaring paradox that just totally defies that traditional economic seesaw you were talking about.
The broken seesaw.
Right. We are watching the housing supply in Tarrant County actively shrink during a period where we are categorically not in a buying frenzy.
Which is wild.
It is. The data reveals a market defined entirely by friction. And understanding the mechanics of that friction is really the only way a consumer can navigate this environment without making a devastating financial misstep.
Yeah, you really have to understand the mechanics. So we have to start with the headline numbers for Tarrant County because, let's be honest, anyone holding a mortgage right now is constantly, you know, mentally appraising their own net worth based on their neighborhood's inventory.
Oh, totally. Everyone is a Zillow surfer these days.
Right. And the big headline is that active inventory is shrinking again.
It really is.
We look at the June 2026 data, and there were exactly 6,713 active homes sitting on the market across the entirety of Tarrant County.
Which, you know, in a vacuum, seeing nearly 7,000 homes sounds like a robust selection.
Sure, it sounds like a lot of houses.
But context is everything here. That 6,713 number represents an 11.6% drop from the 7,592 homes that were available at the exact same time last year.
Wow, an 11.6% drop. That is a massive contraction.
It's massive, especially for a county of this magnitude. I mean, we have to remember, Tarrant County is not some sleepy rural enclave, right?
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
It is a densely populated major economic engine of the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. It houses over 2 million people.
So an 11% drop in supply for 2 million people is a very big deal.
Precisely. And to understand the mechanics of why that active inventory number is falling so sharply, the analysis has to move upstream. We have to look at the new listings data.
Okay, right. So active inventory is just what's sitting there, but new listings are what's coming in.
Exactly. The active inventory is just the pool, right? The new listings are the faucet feeding that pool.
I like that analogy.
And if we pull from the May 2026 numbers, well, the faucet is drying up.
What do the numbers look like?
There were 3,079 new listings that hit the market in Tarrant County.
Okay. Which means we are seeing a structural hesitation from homeowners, right?
Absolutely.
Because looking at the historical context in these reports we have, that 3,079 figure, is a very meaningful pullback. It is down 11.1% year over year.
Yeah, that's a sharp decline.
We are talking about roughly 400 fewer homes entering the market in a single month compared to May of 2025.
And the important thing to note here is that this isn't just a localized blip for the start of summer.
Oh, really? It's a longer trend.
Yeah, zooming out to the year-to-date picture for the first 5 months of 2026, new listings are consistently lagging 2.5% behind the previous year.
Wow. So the hesitation is just systemic across the board.
Completely systemic. Sellers are looking at the macro environment, and they are choosing to freeze in place.
Freeze in place.
Yeah. And the mechanism driving this freeze is tied directly to the cost of debt they secured during the anomalous low-rate environment of 2020 and 2021.
Right. And I think the most visceral way for our listener to understand this systemic hesitation is to look at the weather outside right now.
Oh, this is the perfect analogy.
Yeah, we can call this the golden handcuffs, or, you know, the rate lock mode.
The rate lock mode. I like that.
So imagine you are sitting in your living room right now. It is late July. It is 105 degrees outside, with a punishing 60% humidity.
Just miserable.
Just stepping onto the pavement feels like walking into an oven.
Yep.
But inside your house, your air conditioning system is humming along flawlessly, right? It's keeping your living room at a perfect, crisp 68 degrees.
Oh, that sounds lovely right now.
Doesn't. Now, imagine someone knocks on your door and offers you a slightly bigger house, maybe one with a better kitchen, located across town.
Okay, I'm listening.
But the catch is, you have to walk there in the 105 degree heat. And on top of that, the air conditioning in that new house is going to cost you literally twice as much on your monthly utility bill for the rest of your life.
Oh, man. Yeah, no.
Right. Nobody is leaving that 68-degree living room.
They are staying put unless the current house is literally burning down around them.
Exactly.
And that analogy perfectly encapsulates the behavioral economics of the Tarrant County seller in mid-2026.
It really does.
The 68-degree air conditioning represents the sub-4% mortgage rates that millions of homeowners locked in just a few years ago.
Those historically cheap rates.
Right. And current market interest rates represent that 105-degree Texas heat.
It's painful just thinking about it.
It is painful. The financial friction of abandoning a historically cheap debt instrument just to take on historically average but comparatively very painful new debt, it creates a literal moat around their property.
They are entirely disincentivized to sell.
Entirely. And this directly dictates the months of supply metric in the data.
Right. Because if the sellers are locked in their air-conditioned fortresses, the inventory pool can't replenish.
Exactly.
So for the listener trying to contextualize what months of supply actually measures, let's break that down. It is a theoretical calculation, right?
Right. It's a hypothetical metric.
It asks the question, if not a single new house was listed for sale starting tomorrow, how long would it take for the current pace of buyers to purchase every single remaining home on the market?
Right. It is the ultimate barometer for leverage in a real estate transaction.
Leverage is the perfect word for it.
Yeah, because economists traditionally consider a 6-month supply to be the definition of a perfectly balanced equilibrium market.
So 6 months is the sweet spot.
Yeah. At 6 months, buyers have enough selection to avoid making desperate compromises, and sellers aren't pressured to accept lowball offers.
It's fair for everyone.
Right. And prices generally appreciate at a slow, predictable rate matching inflation. But in Tarrant County right now, driven entirely by that rate lock moat, the data shows we have dropped from a 4.2-month supply down to a 3.6-month supply.
Wait, down to 3.6 months?
Yes.
3.6 months.
So even without a buying frenzy, a 3.6-month supply dictates that we are operating firmly in a seller's market.
Firmly.
Because the buyers who are brave enough to be out touring homes in this literal and metaphorical heat are absorbing the limited properties that do manage to hit the MLS significantly faster than the rate-locked sellers are willing to replace them.
The math leaves absolutely no ambiguity there. The tightening is happening from the top down. Supply is the independent variable constraining the entire ecosystem right now.
But, and this is where it gets crazy, this introduces the most jarring paradox in the entire data set that we're looking at today.
The price and affordability paradox. Yes, the price and affordability paradox. Returning to that economics 101 seesaw, if supply is artificially constrained and demand is just chewing through that 3.6 months of inventory, the law of supply and demand dictates that prices should be absolutely skyrocketing, right?
All right, that's what you would assume. Less supply means higher prices.
We should be seeing massive appreciation, yet we aren't.
No, we really aren't.
Looking at the first quarter of 2026, the median sales price in Tarrant County was perfectly mathematically flat year over year. It was exactly $345,000.
Which is fascinating.
It is. And by May, the single-family median hovered around $355,000. The pricing is incredibly resilient, refusing to crash, but it is certainly not a rocket ship either.
And that resilience in Tarrant County becomes incredibly apparent when we overlay it against the broader regional map.
Oh, yeah, looking at the rest of DFW.
Exactly. Looking eastward at Dallas proper, the market there experienced a much sharper, more painful price correction.
How sharp was the Dallas drop?
The Dallas median sales price dropped 4.1% year over year.
Wow, 4.1%.
Yeah, Dallas saw significant equity erosion. Tarrant County, however, held its ground, remaining flat to slightly positive, effectively acting as a stabilizing bedrock for the western half of the Metroplex.
That's a great point. Tarrant is the bedrock, but reading through the affordability data from these same reports makes that flat pricing look mathematically impossible.
Yeah, the affordability index is where the math gets really tense.
It really does. Because the regional housing affordability index for May of 2026 sat at 92. Now, I know an index of 100 is the baseline equilibrium, right?
Right, 100 is the baseline.
Meaning a household earning the exact median income makes precisely enough money to comfortably qualify for a mortgage on the exact median-priced home, assuming, you know, standard underwriting criteria.
The index is a direct measure of local purchasing power against local asset costs.
So if the index is at 92, the math simply does not work for the local population.
It does not.
An index under 100 means the median household in Tarrant County literally does not earn enough money to easily qualify for that $355,000 median home.
Right. They are statistically priced out.
The average local family is priced out of the average local house, which forces this massive logical deduction. If the locals cannot afford the houses, the people absorbing this 3.6 months of supply must be heavily skewed toward outside money. Or they are buyers who are putting themselves in incredibly precarious financial situations.
It's exactly that combination. The demographic breakdown of who is actually closing on these homes reveals three very distinct buyer profiles keeping this engine running.
Okay, let's break those three down because this is crucial for you as a listener to understand who you are competing against.
Well, the first profile absolutely validates the influx of outside money. We are talking about the out-of-state equity transfers.
Ah, right. The California migration.
Exactly. It's the continued migration from high cost of living states, California, New York, Illinois.
People think that's slowed down, but the macroeconomic cash flow from the coast to Texas hasn't stopped, has it?
Not at all. It hasn't stopped. It has just evolved.
Evolved how?
Well, these buyers are selling properties in markets where the median might be $800,000 or $1 million.
Right.
So even if their coastal home lost a little value in the broader market cool down, they're still walking away with massive amounts of raw equity.
Just huge piles of cash.
Yes. They take that cash and come straight to Tarrant County. To a buyer migrating from, say, San Jose, a $355,000 median price feels like a typographical error on the listing.
A typo. That's so true.
It is unfathomably cheap to them. Furthermore, because they are bringing hundreds of thousands of dollars to the closing table, they are functionally immune to the 6.5% interest rates.
Oh, that is such a key point.
Right. They might take out a tiny mortgage or honestly just buy the home outright in cash. They bypass the local affordability index entirely because they are operating with a completely different capital structure.
So they are essentially importing affordability.
That's a great way to put it.
That explains the high end and the cash transactions, but for the domestic local population, the buyers have to be the people we talked about earlier, the ones whose houses are metaphorically on fire.
Yes. The necessity movers.
The necessity movers. That's group number two.
And the necessity movers make up the second and arguably most consistent demographic right now. Because real estate is ultimately driven by life events.
Right. The things you can't control.
Exactly. In the industry, we often refer to them as the D's.
The D's.
Yeah. Diapers, diamonds, divorce, death, and default.
Wow. Okay. Diapers, diamonds, divorce, death, and default. That covers just about every major life transition.
It really does. Think about a family living in a 1,200 square foot, two-bedroom starter home.
Okay.
If they suddenly find out they're having twins, they cannot stay in that home, regardless of how much they love their 3% interest rate.
Right. You literally run out of physical space for cribs.
Exactly. Or think about a couple going through a divorce. They must liquidate the shared asset and purchase two separate new dwellings.
Right. The court mandates it in a lot of cases.
Or corporate relocations. They force people to move across the country within 30 days.
So these buyers are out braving the 105-degree market heat because their fundamental life circumstances demand immediate shelter solutions.
Precisely. They are buying regardless of where the affordability index sits. They just have to.
And then there's the third group. And looking at the data, this group feels like the most vulnerable segment of this entire ecosystem.
They absolutely are.
Because these are the buyers who don't have massive coastal equity, and they aren't necessarily forced to move by a life event like a divorce or twins, but they are just determined to achieve home ownership.
Right, the aspirational local buyer.
But at a $355,000 median price, these local buyers are stretching their debt-to-income ratios to the absolute razor-thin regulatory maximums.
The tension in this third group is palpable. You can feel it in the market.
I bet.
To understand their reality, we have to look closely at the debt-to-income ratio, or DTI.
Right, DTI. Let's explain that for the listener because it's a huge part of the underwriting process.
So when a lender underwrites a mortgage, they typically want to see that all of your monthly debt payments, that means your new mortgage, your car loans, student loans, minimum credit card payments, that all of that combined does not exceed 43% to 45% of your gross monthly income.
So nearly half your pre-tax income is just going to debt service.
Exactly. And because of where prices and rates are currently pinned, these stretched buyers are frequently pushing right up against that 45% ceiling.
They are maxing out what the bank will legally let them borrow.
Maxing it out completely. They are scraping together minimum 3% or 5% down payments. They are utilizing down payment assistance programs. And they are accepting monthly obligations that leave them with incredibly little discretionary income.
Being house poor, essentially.
Highly house poor.
You know, you can feel that tension when you walk into an open house right now.
Oh, it is a completely different vibe than a few years ago.
It is. The conversational tone isn't that jubilant excitement of 2021 where people were, you know, tossing offers $50,000 over asking price without blinking.
Waiving all inspections, sight unseen.
Exactly. Today, buyers are pacing the rooms, running mortgage calculators on their phones, and analyzing every single penny.
They are terrified of making a catastrophic mistake at these price points.
Which brings us to the elephant in the room, the actual mechanics of this rate environment. We keep referencing the cost of debt, so I think we need to put the precise early summer 2026 data on the table.
The exact figures dictate the boundaries of the entire market, so we definitely need to lay them out.
Okay, so looking at a standard 30-year conventional fixed-rate mortgage right now, the base rate is hovering in a band between 5.99% and 6.52%.
Right.
And that variance depends heavily on the specific week, the bond market's mood, and obviously, you know, the individual borrower's credit score. Interestingly, the 15-year fixed-rate mortgage has actually provided a bit of psychological relief. It dipped back below that mental barrier of 6%, currently sitting around 5.38% to 5.89%.
Which is nice, but a 15-year payment on a $355K house is still steep.
Very steep. But the critical numbers lie within the FHA programs, because those are the exact loans heavily utilized by those stretch buyers we just talked about, the ones pushing their DTI to the limit.
The Federal Housing Administration loans are absolutely vital for entry-level buyers right now.
Because they allow for lower credit scores, right?
Lower credit scores and down payments as low as 3.5%.
So what do those rates look like?
Well, the headline rate on an FHA 30-year loan looks really appealing right now.
Yeah.
It is sitting between 5.88% and 6.25%.
Okay, sub 6% sounds great.
It does sound great. But that base rate is highly deceptive without understanding the mechanics of mortgage insurance.
Ah, the catch.
Always a catch.
Yeah.
Because the government is taking on the risk of that very low down payment, they penalize the borrower to fund the insurance pool.
Right. So how does that penalty actually work in practice?
The mechanism is a two-part mortgage insurance premium, or MIP.
Okay, two parts.
First, the FHA charges an upfront premium. This is typically 1.75% of the total loan amount.
Which is thousands of dollars.
Right. And it usually just gets rolled into the total debt, meaning the buyer is actually paying interest on their insurance fee for 30 years.
Wait, really? They finance the fee.
Oh, yeah. Almost everyone rolls it in.
So they are paying interest on a fee. That is painful.
It gets worse. Second, there is an ongoing annual premium. They divide that by 12 and add it to the monthly payment.
Right, the monthly PMI that everyone hates.
Exactly.
Ah.
So when a lender calculates the annual percentage rate, the APR, which reflects the true all-in cost of the loan, including these fees, that attractive 5.88% base rate suddenly spikes to nearly 7% APR.
Wow, so it jumps a full percent just from the fees.
Basically, yeah.
So the stretched buyer is functionally paying a 7% cost of capital every single month, severely suffocating their cash flow.
It suffocates it completely.
Which begs the macroeconomic question. I think every listener is wondering this. Why are we stuck in this purgatory?
The million-dollar question.
Right. Because inflation has shown documented signs of cooling throughout late 2025 and early 2026. The Federal Reserve has signaled they were at the end of their aggressive hiking cycle. The natural assumption for the average consumer is that the Fed should just, you know, flip a switch and lower mortgage rates.
That is the assumption, but the disconnect stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of how mortgages are actually funded.
Okay, break that down for us, because the Fed doesn't actually set mortgage rates, do they?
No, they don't. The Federal Reserve dictates the federal funds rate. That is simply the rate at which commercial banks lend money to each other overnight.
Overnight, so it's very short term.
Extremely short term. It is a short term lever. Mortgage rates, however, are long term debt instruments.
40 years long.
Exactly. They are packaged into mortgage-backed securities and sold to investors on the open market. Therefore, mortgage rates track much more closely with the yield on the 10-year Treasury note.
The 10-year Treasury.
Yes. That is the global benchmark for long-term risk-free borrowing.
Because the United States government is considered the safest bet in the world, right? So the 10-year Treasury is the absolute baseline.
The baseline, exactly. The dynamic is entirely based on risk premiums. Right now, that 10-year Treasury yield remains stubbornly elevated. It's fluctuating above the 4% mark.
Okay.
So think about it from an investor's perspective. If an institutional investor can buy a U.S. government bond and guarantee a 4% return with literally zero risk of default, they are going to demand a significant premium to take on the risk of lending money to a consumer buying a house in Tarrant County.
Because the consumer might default, the U.S. government won't.
Right. Historically, that premium, the spread between the 10-year Treasury and the 30-year mortgage, is usually around 1.5 to 2 percentage points.
So you take the Treasury rate and add 2%.
Roughly, yes. So as long as the bond market demands a 4% yield on government debt, that 10-year Treasury acts as a concrete floor. It physically prevents 30-year mortgage rates from dropping below the 6% threshold in any meaningful, sustained way.
So we are essentially waiting on the bond market, not the Fed.
Exactly.
But the heavy forecasting from major institutions suggests that floor is going to eventually crack.
It has to, eventually.
Right. And I was looking at the projections from the Texas A&M Real Estate Research Center, which, by the way, operates as the absolute gold standard for property data in this state.
Oh, they are fantastic. Top-tier data.
They are forecasting a gradual, methodical easing of rates. They project that assuming inflation continues to behave and the broader economy doesn't overheat, we could see rates slowly move toward the 5.0% to 5.6% range by late 2026 or early 2027.
Which would be a massive relief. But, you know, macroeconomic forecasts are incredibly useful for institutional planning. For a consumer living in a two-bedroom house with three kids, a forecast doesn't alleviate the pressure of today.
It doesn't help you pay the mortgage this month.
Not at all.
Which perfectly aligns with the reality of living in Texas. I feel like waiting for macroeconomic rate relief feels exactly like waiting for a late afternoon Texas summer thunderstorm to break the July heat.
Oh, that is so true. You just stare at the sky.
Right. You pull up the radar on your phone. The meteorologist is practically promising an 80% chance of rain. You can step onto your porch and physically see the dark cumulonimbus clouds building on the horizon.
Oh, you can smell the rain.
You can feel the barometric pressure dropping. Everything points to relief. But sometimes, due to microclimates or sheer bad luck, that storm just skirts right around your specific neighborhood.
It rains three streets over and your yard stays bone dry.
Exactly. It is heavily forecasted. It might happen eventually, but you simply cannot put your entire family's life on hold, standing in the front yard for months, waiting for a drop of rain.
You can't. The opportunity cost of waiting becomes too high.
Especially for those necessity movers.
Right. If a family is outgrowing their physical space, they cannot pause a toddler's growth spurts while waiting for the 10-year Treasury yield to soften.
You can't tell your kid to stop growing until rates drop.
Exactly. Because of this, the strategic reality for proactive buyers has shifted entirely away from hoping for macroeconomic relief. Instead of sitting on the sidelines, savvy buyers are manufacturing their own microeconomic relief directly at the negotiating table.
Okay, this is fascinating. This goes back to utilizing that 3.6-month supply we talked about earlier.
Yes, it all connects.
Even though it is technically a seller's market, the sellers know the buyers are stretched to the absolute limit. So the buyers are walking into these transactions and asking for seller concessions, specifically targeting the interest rate rather than haggling over a minor price reduction.
And honestly, the mechanics of a rate buy-down are far more powerful than a price drop.
Let's walk through an example of that so the listener can really grasp the math here.
Sure. So imagine a buyer negotiates a $10,000 reduction on a $355,000 home.
Okay, taking the price down to $345,000.
Right. That $10,000 drop in the loan amount only changes their monthly payment by maybe $60 or $70 a month.
Which is nice, but it doesn't change your life.
The buyer barely feels the relief. It certainly doesn't fix a broken DTI ratio.
Right.
However, if they keep the purchase price at $355,000, but convince the seller to contribute that same $10,000 as a concession at closing to permanently buy down the interest rate, the impact is massive.
Because that $10,000 goes directly to the lender as prepaid interest, physically lowering the fixed rate on the loan for the next 30 years.
Exactly. That $10,000 concession can buy the rate down from 6.5% to perhaps 5.75%.
Wow, almost a full point.
Yes. And that lowers the monthly payment by hundreds of dollars. It drastically improves the buyer's debt-to-income ratio, allowing them to comfortably qualify.
That is a huge difference.
It is. Buyers are also utilizing temporary 2-1 buy-downs.
How do those work?
With a 2-1 buy-down, the seller's concession subsidizes the interest rate by 2% the first year and 1% the second year, before settling at the fixed rate for the remainder of the loan.
So they get a massive discount for the first 2 years.
Exactly. The buyer gets immediate, aggressive relief during the most expensive transition years of home ownership when they are buying furniture, fixing things, paying moving costs, and it's all funded by the seller's equity.
That is an incredibly proactive strategy. I mean, you aren't waiting for the Federal Reserve to fix your problem. You are forcing the seller to fix your problem using their accumulated equity.
You are taking control of the transaction.
But deploying that strategy successfully requires finding a seller who is actually willing to play ball, right?
Not every seller will do it.
And that heavily depends on the specific geography of where you are looking. Tarrant County is massive. It is not a monolith. It is a patchwork of wildly different micro markets.
Oh, absolutely. The geographical data dictates the strategy. You cannot treat a transaction in the urban core the same way you treat a transaction in a luxury suburb.
So let's zoom in on the micro markets. Looking at the geographic breakdowns, Fort Worth proper is undeniably the engine of the entire county.
Without a doubt.
The NetTrust data for March 2026 shows Fort Worth generated 922 closed sales in a single month.
Most 1,000 homes in one city.
Yeah, and the median price for Fort Worth proper was sitting at $331,600. The sheer volume of transactions happening within the city limits just dwarfs the surrounding suburbs.
Fort Worth functions as the vital anchor for the broader ecosystem.
How so?
Because the median price in Fort Worth is $331,600, which is notably below the overall county median of $355,000. It acts as the accessible entry point for those necessity movers and the stretch buyers we discussed earlier.
Ah, so it's the more affordable gateway.
Exactly. While you have highly affluent micro markets pulling the county's average price upward, places like Southlake, Westlake, Colleyville, or Keller, where median prices easily push past $700,000 or even $1 million, Fort Worth is where the actual velocity of trades is occurring.
It's where normal people can still try to buy a house.
Right. It is the flywheel keeping the local real estate industry moving.
Now, speaking of geography and expectations, we have to address something I find hilarious. The great myth of the Tarrant County Ranch.
Oh, this is my favorite topic.
It is so funny to me because whenever someone from a coastal state watches a television show about Texas, they develop this romanticized expectation that moving to the Dallas-Fort Worth area means buying a sprawling 50-acre spread, complete with a herd of cattle, a massive barn, and a half-mile-long gravel driveway.
Yes, everyone wants to be John Dutton from Yellowstone.
Right. So I specifically dug into the May 2026 MLS summary to see what a true working ranch inside Tarrant County costs these days.
And what did you find?
The number of confirmed farm and ranch closings across the entire county in May was zero.
Yep, zero.
Literally zero transactions.
It is a harsh reality check for out-of-state equity buyers.
Yeah.
They want that Yellowstone television aesthetic. But they also demand a 20-minute commute to the cultural amenities of downtown Fort Worth or a quick Uber ride to DFW International Airport.
You can't have both.
You really can't. The structural reality of land use in Tarrant County is that it is heavily, densely urbanized and suburbanized.
It's all concrete and subdivisions now.
Basically. The infrastructure has expanded so aggressively over the last three decades that the county is essentially built out. Any large tracts of land were sold to master-planned community developers years and years ago.
Which means the buyer hunting for true acreage has to dramatically adjust their geographic search parameters.
They have to drive further out.
Yeah, they either need to scour the absolute outer fringes of Tarrant County, where tiny pockets of rural character are barely holding off the advancing tide of suburban sprawl, or they have to look outward to the neighboring exurban counties.
Which is what's happening. To find traditional farm and ranch inventory, buyers are being pushed an hour west into Parker County, or northwest into Jack County, or north into Wise County.
But it's interesting, the lack of sprawling ranches does not mean land isn't transacting within Tarrant County.
No, land is definitely still moving.
The reports show a very specific subsector of general raw land sales moving steadily. There were 34 closed raw land transactions in May, which is actually an increase of 6% year over year.
Which is notable in this market.
Very notable. And the average price for these parcels is roughly $299,000.
So nearly 300 grand just for dirt.
Right. So if there are no farmers buying 50 acres to run cattle, the people dropping $300,000 on dirt inside a dense urban county have to be operating with a completely different objective.
It points directly to two specific buyer profiles, reacting to that 3.6-month inventory shortage we established at the beginning of this deep dive.
Okay, who are the two profiles?
Well, the first profile has to be developers executing infill projects.
Infill projects. Break down those mechanics.
The mechanics of infill development are what's driving these high-priced land sales. Mm. A developer finds an older property on an oversized half-acre lot in a desirable school district.
Okay, like an old 1950s house.
Exactly. They purchase the property for the land value alone. They bring in bulldozers to scrape that 1950s ranch house off the lot. They navigate the municipal zoning boards, and they subdivide that lot to build three brand new vertically oriented townhomes.
Ah, so they cram three houses where one used to be.
Right. They tap into the existing city utilities, bypassing the massive infrastructure costs of building a new subdivision from scratch on the edge of town. They're essentially manufacturing density because a market is starved for inventory.
That makes total sense. Manufacture density. And the second profile, buying that $299,000 dirt.
The second profile has to be the incredibly frustrated consumer.
Frustrated how?
Think about a buyer who spends 6 weekends touring the 3.6 months of existing inventory.
Just driving around in the heat, looking at houses.
Exactly. And they realize every home on the market either requires a massive expensive renovation they don't have the extra cash for, or it completely lacks the floor plan they need for their specific family dynamics.
So they just give up on the existing homes.
Yes. Out of sheer exhaustion, they decide to bypass the existing market entirely. They buy the raw dirt, hire an architect, secure a construction to permanent loan, and build a custom home exactly to their specifications.
Wow.
The friction of the existing market pushes them into new construction.
It is a classic behavioral adaptation. When the secondary market fails to provide adequate solutions, capital flows into primary creation.
Exactly right.
But for the vast majority of consumers who cannot wait 12 to 18 months to build a custom home, they are forced back into the secondary market, which brings us to the actual hand-to-hand combat of the current market dynamics.
The hand-to-hand combat. I love that.
That's what it feels like. The standoff between buyers and sellers is measurable through the pacing metrics.
The pacing tells the entire story of market psychology.
Let's look at the days on market, or DOM. Homes in Tarrant County right now are moving in about 45 days on average.
Okay, 45 days.
Contextually, earlier in the year, the Q1 data showed the average DOM creeping all the way up to 71 days before the spring and summer buying season really gained traction.
So things have sped up a bit.
Yes. So while 45 days feels significantly brisker than the winter sluggishness, we are light years away from the absolute madness of 2021, where homes were listed at 8 a.m. on a Friday and had 20 sight unseen cash offers by dinner time.
Oh, yeah. The 2021 market was an anomaly. A 45-day cycle signifies deliberate, calculated pacing.
Calculated pacing?
Yeah, it means a buyer tours a home on a Saturday. They don't immediately write a panicked offer in the driveway on the hood of their car.
Right.
They go home. They sleep on it. They discuss the implications of the 7% APR with their financial advisor. They schedule a second, more thorough walkthrough on a Tuesday. They review the structural inspection meticulously.
They are taking their time.
They're exercising due diligence because the cost of capital is simply too high to absorb a mistake right now.
You can't afford to buy a lemon at a 7% rate.
You really can't. And this deliberate pacing leads directly to a crucial statistical reality that every seller must internalize. The 96-cent reality.
The 96-cent reality. That is the ultimate metric of compromise right now.
It is.
The data shows that on average, across Tarrant County, sellers are capturing approximately 96% of their original list price at the closing table.
96%.
Yeah. For every dollar a seller publicly asks for on the MLS, the market after negotiations, inspections, and those rate buy-down concessions we talked about is ultimately yielding them 96 cents.
So there is a 4% haircut built into the market right now.
Yes. If a seller lists a home for $400,000, they need to conceptually prepare to close somewhere around $384,000.
And the mechanism driving that 4% haircut is the absolute limitation of buyer purchasing power. It just is.
The buyers don't have the extra cash.
They don't. And it dictates the most vital strategic takeaway for anyone attempting to sell a home right now. Sellers often look at the 3.6-month supply. They assume they have total leverage, and they attempt to price their home 10% above the most recent comparable sales in the neighborhood just to test the waters and see what happens.
Oh, testing the waters. In 2021, the waters tested fine because buyers had limitless cheap debt to cover the appraisal gaps.
Exactly.
Today, testing the waters is financially toxic.
It is catastrophic for the listing. If a seller overprices a property in a market where buyers are stretched to their maximum debt-to-income ratios, the buyers literally do not have the extra $20,000 in cash required to bridge the gap between the bank's appraisal and the inflated asking price.
The math won't allow the sale to happen.
The home will not sell. But worse than not selling, it will stagnate on the MLS. The days on market ticker becomes a scarlet letter.
Oh, yeah. The DOM ticker is brutal.
Buyers and their agents will see a property sitting untouched at 60 days, 75 days, 90 days. And the immediate psychological assumption is no longer, oh, the seller is just greedy.
What do they assume?
The assumption is something is structurally wrong with the foundation or the roof needs replacing.
Right. They assume the house is broken.
The property becomes stigmatized. And the only way to cure that stigma is to eventually execute massive, humiliating price drops that often result in selling the home for less than if they had just priced it correctly on day one.
That is so true.
The key for a seller in Tarrant County is pricing precisely into the reality of the market, acknowledging what the current interest rate environment physically allows a buyer to pay.
That is a sobering but completely necessary reality check for the supply side. But the buy side isn't having an easy time either. The buyers are caught between the rock of high interest rates and the hard place of shrinking inventory.
They are in a very tough spot. For buyers, the critical strategic takeaway is acknowledging the seasonal mechanics of the market.
The season?
Yes. The window of expanding inventory that traditionally happens in the early spring is already closing fast.
Because it's late July now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As we move deeper into late summer, push past the start of the school year in August, and head into the fall, fewer and fewer new listings will hit the market. The pool of options will shrink.
It always dries up in the fall.
So while there is still a reasonable, albeit tight, selection available today, the market remains competitive.
Which means the danger for buyers right now is paralysis by analysis.
Absolutely.
If you as a buyer are determined to be settled, you know, have the moving boxes broken down in the recycling bin and have your children enrolled in the local Tarrant County School District by the time the bell rings in August, you do not have the luxury of spending 3 weeks pondering a property.
You really don't.
You cannot endlessly debate the pros and cons of the kitchen backsplash because while you are hesitating, another buyer, one who has already lost out on two previous homes and is highly motivated, is going to decisively write the contract.
Buyers must be fast. But they must use those seller concessions strategically to protect their monthly cash flow.
So the entire mid-2026 Tarrant County market can basically be summarized as a masterclass in compression and resilience.
Compression and resilience, that perfectly captures it.
The inventory is heavily compressed because homeowners are psychologically and financially locked into their historically cheap debt.
The rate lock mode.
Right. But the pricing remains incredibly resilient because the localized demand driven by that influx of coastal equity transfers and the unavoidable realities of necessity movers is aggressively chewing through whatever limited supply manages to reach the open market.
It is not the speculative frenzy of a few years ago. But anyone holding out hope for a wave of distressed bargain bin foreclosures is completely misreading the macroeconomic fundamentals.
The equity positions are just too strong.
Exactly. People aren't underwater on their loans.
It is a market that heavily penalizes unrealistic expectations on both sides of the closing table and heavily rewards meticulous preparation.
Preparation is everything right now.
But as we wrap up this deep dive analysis, we cannot look at the current friction without looking at what happens when that friction is finally removed. We have to address what you call the dam break scenario.
Yes, the dam break scenario is the most critical variable on the horizon.
So we referenced the Texas A&M forecast earlier, projecting that rates could slowly ease down into the low 5% range by late 2026 or early 2027.
Right.
Currently, the entire real estate industry, buyers, sellers, and agents, is basically holding their breath, waiting for this relief.
Everyone wants it.
Buyers desperately want cheaper monthly payments to ease their debt-to-income ratios. Sellers desperately want the cost of their next home's mortgage to drop enough to justify abandoning their current 3% rate.
And everyone assumes that when rates hit 5%, the market will just magically normalize.
Right. The logic assumes that lower rates unlock the chains, making everything easier and more affordable for everyone involved.
But the flaw in that logic is failing to account for the kinetic energy stored behind the dam.
The kinetic energy.
Yeah. There are two massive opposing behavioral forces waiting for that 5% trigger. On one side of the dam, you have the rate-locked sellers.
The people sitting in the 68-degree air conditioning.
Exactly. If rates drop to 5%, the mathematical sting of losing their 3% mortgage lessens significantly. The gap is bridged.
It doesn't hurt as much.
Right. The theory is that these sellers will finally feel comfortable moving, thereby flooding the market with a massive wave of new inventory, ending the 3.6-month shortage, and allowing supply to finally outpace demand, which should theoretically cool prices down.
That sounds like a utopian scenario for the buyer, a flood of fresh inventory and softer prices.
But look at the force waiting on the other side of the dam. You have a massive, swelling, multi-year wave of pent-up buyer demand.
The people who have been sidelined.
We are talking about millions of millennials and Gen Z buyers nationwide, and tens of thousands locally in Tarrant County alone, who have been forced to sit on the sidelines in rental apartments for 2 years because they mathematically could not afford the payment at a 7% interest rate.
They've just been waiting and saving.
Right. If the headline mortgage rate flashes 5%, that entire generation of buyers is going to jump back into the buyer pool at the exact same moment.
Wow. Which creates a scenario where that tidal wave of resurrected buyer demand instantly swallows whatever new inventory the sellers provide.
Exactly. The psychological relief of a 5% rate has the very real potential to unleash so much simultaneous demand that it completely overwhelms the new supply.
So we end up right back where we started.
Worse, maybe. It could instantly recreate the frantic, multiple-offer bidding war environment. Instead of prices cooling due to new inventory, the sheer velocity of the demand could drive prices aggressively upward, echoing the absolute madness we experienced in 2021.
Which forces a terrifying realization for anyone currently sitting on the sidelines trying to time the market. You know,
timing the market is always dangerous.
Because waiting for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates to save you money on your monthly payment might actually end up costing you significantly more in the total purchase price of the home when you are forced into a bidding war against 20 other buyers.
You might save on the rate, but lose on the purchase price.
Exactly. So for you listening right now, the next time you are sitting in your living room, enjoying that crisp 68-degree air conditioning while the Texas heat bakes the pavement outside, you have to ask yourself a very difficult question.
It's the ultimate question.
Are you staying in that house because it is truly where you want to live? Or are you just afraid of the heat? Because eventually, the weather is going to break, the dam is going to open, and if you haven't decided exactly what your strategic move is going to be before that happens, you're going to get swept away in the flood.